Well, tell me why I'm wrong. Yeah, phone lines are open. Any area of disagreement you have with me, I'd love to hear from you today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire today. This is your friendly voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you. Absolutely thrilled to have this time. Phone lines are wide open. I have no agenda. I've got a few opening comments, but I have no agenda today other than to take your calls, in particular, if you differ with me. I am making an appeal to all of you who differ, who post your differences with me on social media, who will be very outspoken about your differences and where you're sure I'm wrong or why you shouldn't listen to me. Whatever it is, be it spiritual, be it theological, be it practical, be it political, be it cultural, anything whatsoever where you differ with me, any subject I've ever addressed on the air, in writing, in person, ever, I want you to call me and tell me where you differ. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And my goal is not to win a debate. That's not why I'm doing this. I want to hear from you and give you an opportunity to sound off. Now, if you can't call in, I got a number for you. You ready? 1-800-618-8480. If you can't call in now, I mean, here's a number to call anytime and leave a message. Try to keep it under 2 or 3 minutes at the very longest. Give me a piece of your mind. We may play some of these on the air. This is not a number to call to leave a question. We will not be responding to questions. But to tell me why you differ, why you think I'm wrong, or even if you want to leave a positive testimony, we take those too. 1-800-618-8480. Okay, before I go to the phones, I want to share my heart with you openly. So please give me your best ear for a minute, a couple minutes. I desire to honor God and help you. That's what I live for. I do not live to have my name known or to be famous or to be liked. I live to honor God and help you. That's why I'm here. I want to reach people with the good news of Jesus. I want to strengthen the body, and I want to glorify the Lord. If that makes me the most famous man on the planet or the most hated man on the planet is not the issue. I live to please the Lord. Now, Paul wrote in Romans 14 that we should please one another, meaning if I can serve you and help you to put your needs first. So if by my living a certain way causes you to stumble, if I can avoid that, right, you know, maybe I eat certain things that causes you to stumble, Paul says in Romans 14, well, then I won't eat that because I don't want to hurt you. So in that sense, we seek to please one another. But in terms of who I'm trying to please, ultimately, I'm trying to please God, period. I'll read comments, well, you're changing your tune because you don't want to be deplatformed. What? You actually think for a split second that influences decisions we make? Are you serious? I'd rather get banned than compromise. I'd rather be in prison than compromise. I'd rather lose my life than compromise. And I know many of you feel the same way. I don't think in terms like that. Well, he's changing his position because he wants to be liked by the... What? Are you serious? I think of what Paul wrote to the Galatians in Galatians 1, where he said, if I yet please men, I wouldn't be a servant of the Messiah. That's how I live my life. God knows. As I pour my heart out to him alone on my face and saying, God, I just want people to know you, to experience your goodness, to know the truth about you. That's what I live for. And that's why I get frustrated when I can't help people. It's not because I want to be proven right. I'm trying to communicate something so you'll understand what moves me, what motivates me. You know, for example, when we tackle QAnon, I'm not trying to rile people, nor am I trying to please some segment that rejects QAnon. This is something that began to look at, began to get concerned about. had an expert guest on. Absolutely. We're trying to find out how to get praying medic Dave Hayes on to interact with Jim Beverly. With a heartbeat, of course I'll do that. Of course I will. That's why we open the phones for 2 days for people to call in to differ. All right? My goal is to help people. I'll address issues innocently. Someone will ask me a question, I'll answer it, only to find out it's the big controversy of the hour, and I just got in hot water. Fine. I'm going to pursue the truth, wherever that leads. If I have to change your view on something, so be it. If it costs me support, so be it. But what grieves me is an extraordinary attitude of closed-mindedness. And I want to speak to you plainly. Some of you are actually responding as if you're in cults. Whatever group it is, I'm not making any assumption about what group or whatever, you actually are responding with cult-like, closed-minded tendencies, and that scares me because I want to help people with truth, and I can't even reason with them. Let me give you an example. I published an article yesterday asking the question, is QAnon helping pedophiles more than harming them? And I started off with a very famous interaction now between President Trump and an interviewer on NBC during a town hall. So words 7 through 9 in the first line reference this was on NBC because that's where it took place. That's where the president held it, on NBC. And I quote what happened. All right. So in response to that article, which I encourage everyone to read, especially if you care about child trafficking and pedophilia and you want to see this eradicated, this horror from the planet. Okay. So the number one response in terms of getting the most likes in response to that on our Facebook page, which has good reach. I mean, we've got about 600,000 followers and reach millions of people every week. All right. Look at the number one response. This is frightening to me, friends. Frightening. Here it is. It's from David. I honestly stopped reading when I got to interviewed at length by NBC. If anyone follows any mainstream media and regurgitates anything that they spew, they have lost my respect. Simple as that. What? Because I mentioned the president did this interview on NBC. The moment he saw the words NBC, he stopped reading. Friends, this is scary. This is scary. And what's scarier is that got more likes than any other response in the article. Now, many people were rational. Many people challenged David, as he should be challenged. And God help him. God help him to be someone who pursues truth. It would be one thing if I said, I know this is crazy and controversial, but I'm saying this on the authority of NBC. Well, then question it. I'm not going to listen to the authority of NBC. But when I'm quoting the president, President Trump, when he was on NBC quoting his words, I'm not going to read it. And you mentioned NBC. Are you serious? But here's some of the other comments that follow. I mean, this scares me. I don't care about me. I don't care about if you'd like my article or not, or buy my book or not, or think I'm a cool guy or an idiot. That's not the issue. I want to help you. I want to be of service to you. And I come to your front door because I've got someone sent me a letter for you. And it says urgent, and it actually is a big tax refund they're trying to get to you, right? And I knock on your door and say, hey, you're a thief. You're here to... No, I'm trying to deliver something. I'm trying to help you. That mustache. I saw in a dream last night someone come with a mustache. And I'm your neighbor. I got something for you. I'm trying to help you. Here, look at some of the other comments. David, sad to say that Dr. Brown still believes the corporate media, not aware of the devil's scheme, too academic-minded. This is Domingo. Are you serious? Domingo! Believes the mainstream media too academic. I'm quoting the president when he was on NBC. Please, I'm not upset for me. I'm upset for you. I'm trying to help people. How about this? Another Dave. David, that and white supremacy, which is why I quit reading it. Dr. Brown might be a Hebrew and Greek scholar, but it seems that he'd like to become the political oracle of the evangelical church, which has been mostly pro-Trump and pro-Constitution. I voted for Trump twice, and I'm pro-Constitution. White supremacy, I'm quoting a discussion. They asked the president to denounce white supremacy and then QAnon. I'm not allowed to quote that? What am I supposed to say? That's where the president did the interview, by his choice on NBC. I'm not allowed to quote him because it was on NBC? Are you serious? But friends, this is why I get concerned. This is cult-like. This is just, I'm not listening. You know, you put our hands over our eyes, our ears, I'm not listening. You can say what you, that's what we're doing. And that to me is frankly scary. You say, well, the left does it all the time. That scares me too. Well, how come you don't call it the left? I do day and night, read the articles. How about this from Laura? David, right? This is a distract tactic. Someone is out to alter the narrative and perception. This is not a tactic. I'm quoting the president on NBC. This is not a tactic. Jonathan, Kirk, no, but he running with the same MSM narrative, misdirected, misinformation, and partial truth. I'm not running with a narrative. How do I help people like this? I was interacting with Nancy last night, and I said, can I help these people? She said, no. In other words, there's no ability to listen. There's no ability to reason. You know what it reminds me of? My sister and I, we were little. My dad owned a summer house in Long Island before we moved to Long Island. So we'd spend the summer there, and he'd commute into work in New York City because we lived in New York City. And I don't know, my sister is maybe 7 or something. I was 4, and there was a neighbor, and their girl was like 2 years old, and we were taking a walk down the street. Those days you could do that, taking a walk down the street. And the little girl said, I want to come with you. So my sister said, you have to ask your mommy. So she said, Mom. And her mother said, yes. The little girl said, she said, yes. That's the way this is the type of, quote, reasoning we're doing with people. Here, how about this one, Mark? NBC, you've gone off the cliff. And that has a bunch of, and you see people run with it. Mike Brown, Dr. Brown, he believes in NBC. He follows the mainstream media. Are you serious? This is what we're dealing with, friends. This frankly scares me because truth has gone out the window. The ability to communicate has gone out the window. Sandy, I think you've lost it. I lost it because I quoted the president when he was on NBC. That means I follow mainstream media and have sold out the president. What? Boy, are you on the wrong side of this one from Claire? And you are shortly going to be shown. Hope you don't lose too much money on your new book. We're in a way different season you've ever thought of. Brace yourself and you'll be flabbergasted when you find out who Q is. Ah, cult, cult, cult. That's a cultist speaking there. Angela, more lies from the mainstream media. You understand why I'm so exercised over this? You understand why I'm so grieved? This is a spirit of deception. The shutting of the mind and the shutting of the eyes, the shutting of the ears, you can't even interact with folks like this. May God help them.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
866-34-TRUTH. Tell me why I'm wrong. Black Hebrew Israelite, QAnon supporter, someone just differs with me theologically, politically, culturally. Please, give me a call. Look, on our Friday shows, many times when we start the show, all of our lines are filled. People call in right before it starts. Rachel, our call screener, is there early. And many a time, we've got all the lines jammed. And then the moment one line opens up, someone else calls. And these are people just asking questions and wondering about things. And you've got questions, we've got answers, etc. Almost invariably, I've been at this for years now, by God's grace. I mean, it feels like the first day. I'm so excited and love being on the air. And feel the pleasure of God in doing it. But, you know, it's 12 years of Daily Talk Radio, 12 years plus, and almost every time for years now where I specifically will open up the phone to critics. It's not if I say, hey, let's have a discussion about Calvinism or something, you know, we'll get a lot of calls or why you don't believe certain things, we'll get calls. But if I ask, okay, you're a critic, I want you to call in. You blast me on YouTube, you blast me on Facebook, you blast me on Twitter, you blast me elsewhere. You have websites attacking me, you have videos attacking me, you have whatever. I'm asking you to call in. I'm opening the phones and I'm giving you free airtime to air your, we're paying for the airtime so you can air your difference with me. Almost invariably, we don't get calls. Almost invariably. So I don't want to bore you today, just me. Obviously, you respect me and listen. That's why you're here. Or you hate me enough to listen, whatever it is. I bless you either way. But, hey, Rachel, tell you what, we'll call with any question you have because we're just not getting people to call attacking. Now, the funny thing is, and I'm not looking at social media comments because this is, we asked you to call in. The funny thing is, the people will be at their keyboards blasting and attacking me. You're an idiot. You're a jerk. You're wrong about this. I said, well, call in. Call in. And to me, one sign of having the truth is you bring it to the light. You bring it to the light. I've had dialogue with an ultra-Orthodox rabbi for many, many years. I've had dialogue with quite a few ultra-Orthodox rabbis. But one in particular, we began to exchange writings back and forth via email, back and forth. Some we posted publicly. But it's hundreds and hundreds of pages. Hundreds and hundreds of pages. And it's good stuff. I mean, it's solid discussion. He made me think. I hope I made him think. But certainly we put time and effort into this. So recently he approached me about just putting everything out, not in the book, but just putting everything out for free online. So he put a lot of the discussion together. Now I'm putting a lot of it together. We're taking time to do it. But when it's done, it'll be hundreds and hundreds of pages. I don't know, 300 pages, maybe even more. I don't know. Of real serious dialogue about the identity of the Messiah, Isaiah 53, things like that. And it's we're just going to post it, him on his website, me online. Why? Because we both feel confident that we're on the side of truth. Obviously, we have deep differences, but we both feel confident we're on the side of truth and therefore want everyone to look at what we have to say. Remember when you were a kid and you didn't eat the cookie? Johnny, did you eat the cookie? You know, your mom comes in, she looks in the cookie jar. Did you eat the cookie? There were four cookies there. There were only three left. Mommy, I didn't. Look at my teeth. Look. Look at my hands. Look at my pocket. Everywhere you would have hidden it or all the stuff you know you wouldn't do if you were guilty because you're not guilty. Look, no, check my room. Check. I didn't do it. But when you did do it, like, how can you question me? You don't. You know, you start crying and you're trying to get the crumbs off your lips and whatever and don't look at my hands. But when you're clean, just come out in this public. If you're so sure I'm wrong, tell the whole world. I do not respect those that hide behind keyboards in anonymity, okay? It makes me take your views a little serious. Now, some of you can't call in now. Fully respect it. So let me give you that number again. Where? Put it somewhere. And anyway, we'll get it for you. I just moved it around and, here we got it. Got it. Let me reach down and get it there. If you can't call live, then call and blast me or tell me why I'm wrong or just respectfully differ. Because some of you are very respectful, very gracious, and others nasty. Bless both of you either way. 1-800-618-8480. 1-800-618-8480. And leave us a voicemail, and we'll play some of them on the air. So avoid profanity if you want to get on, and keep it under 2 minutes, certainly under three. And we'll play some of these on the air. All right. Oh, good. We got some phone lines lit up, probably just people with questions. But let's see. Let's start in Cincinnati, Ohio. Van, thank you so much for calling the Line of Fire today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm not sure I'm in a position to tell you that you're wrong about anything. I called in with just a regular question, although I could question or challenge something if we have time after that. But if I could ask about the Isaiah chapter 7, verses 14 and 15, birth issue.
Yeah.
I've seen a video or two of yours online about that issue. But I didn't get out of that a clear explanation about how a Messiah who comes along hundreds of years later could you know fit the requirement for somebody who's needed in the near term. So how does
got it?
How does
yeah. So verse 50. Yeah. Thank you for the question. And if I wasn't sufficiently clear in my explanation online, let me try to simplify things here. Christians are used to seeing this quoted in Matthew 1, where the Septuagint version is followed that tells us a virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and his name will be Emmanuel. The Hebrew, if you're reading it, you would say that it's speaking of an imminent birth, something that's about to happen, and that the woman is an alma, hineha maharavi oledet ben v'karat shemo Emmanuel, that she's an alma, so she's a young woman, presumably unmarried, but it doesn't explicitly speak of virgin. There's no one Hebrew word outside of a legal context having to do with virginity and things like that and laws pertaining to virginity the word betula in and of itself does not mean virgin. So you'd have to have what you call periphrasis of circumlocution, which is an explanation. She was an alma or a betula who never slept with a man. So she is not explicitly identified as virgin, but it could well refer to a virgin, I would say, likely does. So at least someone who was a virgin at that moment that the prophecy was given. But there's some birth of some supernatural importance, some significance, and it will signify with his name, God with us. But then what immediately follows is judgment on sinning Israel and judgment on Judah, etc. And that's through the rest of the chapter. So how is it that Matthew quotes it as a prophecy of the virgin birth? Forget the virgin issue, because it can legitimately say that she was just an alma, and therefore it wasn't expected that she would have children. But it seems to be 700 years late.
Right.
You know, it would be like me saying, hey, Van, tell you what, as a sign that I'm going to come through for you, I'm sending you this in the mail. Well, it comes 800 years later. How did that help you? So the answer is that many messianic prophecies, so this is the simple answer, okay? The answer is that many messianic prophecies, when they were given, were initially given as promises to the line of David at that time. But whatever happened did not exhaust the meaning of it. So, for example, Isaiah 9, rejoicing in the birth of a child, whose birth is going to signify the breaking of the power of Assyria, and this child will clearly be the Messiah. Well, the only one born around that time that could nearly fit that is Hezekiah, but he's obviously not the Messiah. Psalm 2 is the coronation psalm, right? So the new king is being celebrated as God's son installed in Jerusalem. Well, what happens when the new king is kind of a jerk or even an idol worshiper and comes under judgment? And what happens when there is no king and the children of Israel are in exile or they're back in their land and they have no Davidic ruler? You look at Psalm 2 and you say, well, where is that promised king? Isaiah 9, where is that promised child? Isaiah 7, where is that one? So there were promises that were given to the line of David that had relevance in their day, but never fulfilled the promise. Therefore, we are still waiting for that son of David to come. Does that clarify things for you?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I've heard you say in the past about some prophecies play out over time or different parts. But still, I mean, if they needed somebody within the next few years, did they get somebody in the next few years?
Yeah, I believe they did.
And what does the Messiah have to do with that anyway?
Yeah, what happens is there was someone born, but it does not exhaust the promise to the line of David. Remember, this is couched not just to King Ahaz, but to the house of David. And the phrase house of David is only used a few times. It's used in Isaiah 7, then it's used in Isaiah 22. It's not a common phrase in the prophets or in the book of Isaiah. So, yes, I believe somebody was born at that time to the house of David, but they're lost in obscurity. In other words, whatever is spoken, we have no idea about this Emmanuel, anything else that happens. So, therefore, it remains one of these outstanding things. God said something was going to happen, a birth of supernatural proportion, because he's saying, you ask, I'm going to do something massive to back this, and someone that would rightly be called Emmanuel, and there's no record, there's no preservation of any of this. In fact, Isaiah's own son in the 8th chapter seems to even take over the time frame. So somebody's born, but not one that exhausts this. The simple thing would be if I said to you, let's say before Barack Obama was president, I said, we're going to have an African-American president. He's going to be called the chosen one. He's going to do this. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And then 2 years later, Obama comes into office, called the chosen one, but he didn't do all that was prophesied. Okay. Now we begin to look, well, who is that person? Because the prophecy is still out there. So there is an immediate fulfillment, but it did not exhaust the meaning. There was some birth of some significance that served as a timekeeper. Matthew looks back centuries later and says, whatever happened to that? Was it exhausted? Was it fulfilled? Whatever happened to Isaiah 9? Was that exhausted? Was it fulfilled? The answer is no. Just like the exile from Babylon, the children of Israel began to come back, but there is a greater exile, return from exile that was promised. That's what Matthew sees, the greater fulfillment.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Everyone watching online, God willing, tomorrow, New Year's Eve, we are going to do a commercial-free open segment where you'll be able to interact with me on Facebook and YouTube. So that'll be our normal radio time. For those listening on radio, we'll have a special broadcast for you. Then on New Year's Day on radio and everywhere else you watch, we are going to be airing an explosive interview, just recorded, with Dr. Frank Schallenberger about the COVID-19 vaccine. I mean, an eye-opening interview. That'll be New Year's Day. Also, 45 minutes from now, a little less, so 4:15 Eastern Time, we'll be back on the Ask Dr. Brown channel on YouTube for a weekly Q&A chat. So if you don't get through now, and thankfully our phone lines are getting jammed because I want to hear from folks who differ with me today, we will be taking more questions and interacting about a little over 40 minutes from now, 4:15 Eastern Time, on the Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel. All right, let's go over to Hillary in Connecticut. Thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. Oh, yep. Hi. Hi. How are you?
Just fine. Thanks.
I'm good. I am definitely new to the show as of today. I had somebody send me a link to one of your videos discussing QAnon, and to be honest, I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, but I was able to like skim through.
Yep.
And I guess my biggest frustration about the discussions about QAnon is more so about the rage and the craziness that comes out of it, but never about the truth that is actually discussed that QAnon originates from. And that's the only thing that I had to share about it, really. I want to hear what you had to say about it, what you think is true that comes out of QAnon, and then what you think, because I know that you're skeptical of it, you're kind of not so much in favor of it. I just wanted to know if you thought that anything good can come out of it just by a truthful topic being discussed.
Yeah, and Hillary, thank you so much for the tone of your question as well, especially for someone that doesn't know me at all to be as gracious as you are. Here's the concern. There's no question, as Professor Beverly said both days of the show, yesterday and the day before, that there is truth that's put out by QAnon, and it's talking about specifically by Q himself and by others that would be considered, you know, leading Q proponents, that there's certainly truth that's put out and important stands that are being taken, but they are so mixed with error, so mixed with conspiracy theories that are not just unproven but are proven to be false, that they get so far in the realm of cover up and you know, the moment, for example, that I brought my guest on, people are posting, this proves Brown's part of the deep state. I mean, this is, and I'm bought out by the cultural elites. It's like, so the suspicion that comes with it ends up doing more harm than good. That's why we referenced a statement, which is online and quoted in Dr. Beverly's book, The QAnon Deception, by almost 100 organizations, including people who were formerly sex trafficked themselves. So these are on the front lines of fighting sex trafficking, saying QAnon is doing more harm than good. Please stop spreading this stuff. What you're focusing on is not the real problem. So that's the concern. And so in other words, by all means, do you personally know any human being, any friend, any associate, any coworker who would not be utterly mortified over the subject of pedophilia and child trafficking? I mean, we know it's out there. We know when there is like some big breakthrough and the FBI finds hundreds of people who are part of a child porn ring, and then the names are released, and it's the dentist next door, and it's the businessman across the street, and it's the, you know, the pastor, you know, we're shocked to hear who's involved with this. And then you hear more about what happens in Hollywood behind the scenes, and more people talking about how they were sexually abused. So we know stuff is out there. And the folks that are on the front lines fighting it say the QAnon stuff does more harm than good. So that's the concern. Of course we want to address the issues. And of course we know there's corruption all over the place, and a lot of things are not what they seem to be. You know, I just recorded an interview that'll air on January 1st with a medical expert expressing his reservations about the COVID-19 vaccine and saying the people on the front lines, the first responders, you know, in the medical world, they want to help people, but the people higher up in big pharma, they want to make money. So we understand this mixed motivation and junk, and I believe they're, quote, deep state people that are really have tried to hurt the president. But it's when it's mixed together with error and far out stuff, and then people almost have a cult-like response to it, that's what concerns me.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And what I found really interesting about QAnon is how it did start off in the beginning of having some sense to it. I'm not entirely too familiar with the history, like the detailed history of QAnon, but before it exploded, I believe that it was just a bunch of people who were investigating, doing personal investigation into the Pizzagate scandal of 2016, the Hillary Clinton campaign. And the very disturbing emails, such as one of them where they're having a pool party and recruiting three young girls and listing their ages to be entertainment for this pool party, which is an email exchange between adults who are supposed to be working together. So I think that, and among many other pieces of evidence, there were a lot of personal investigators who started off in these small groups on line, and then they grew into these huge movements where now it's like memes are being shared and there's ridiculous information on there, and I think that that's really where it's turned into this really dark, scary, weird, and just factually false place.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to tell whether or not that happened because the information from that was revealed in the Hillary Clinton emails, along with the history that we have of our government involved in these child trafficking rings, is so dark. I don't know if that information is so dark it actually melted people's brains, and they essentially came up with these other crazy conspiracies.
Here's the more logical answer would be that some people, even with good intent and sincerity, then, because they opened themselves up to the conspiracy thing to start, that Q is this high-placed military intelligence person that can't divulge information. As Dr. Beverly said, there is zero indication at any point that this person has access to insider military information. And also, a great point he made, that if this was as bad as it is claimed to be with this many powerful people, then the people on the front lines, because many have identities there, they'd be taken out. They'd be taken out in a heartbeat. They'd be out of here. So it's not that the darkness melted people's brains. It was that truth was mixed with error, with an overdose of suspicion from day one, and with any verifiable information that would refute the theory immediately being dismissed as, well, you're just part of the deep state. So it had like a cult-like mechanism built in. But listen to both broadcasts as you have opportunity. If you're able to look at the book, check it out, and then just keep looking, thinking. That's the key thing. But thank you for weighing in, Hillary. I really appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll stay with QAnon. Stephen in Atlanta, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Really well. Thank you.
Good. I'm sorry about all the hate you've been getting lately. I know it's kind of tough.
It comes with the turf. And honestly, Stephen, I appreciate you saying that. But honestly, what bothers me is I want to help those people. And when they come with swords flying, I'm unable to reason with them and help them. I don't mind taking the hate if I can help somebody, but if the hate's there and in the end I can't even help the person, that's what grieves me. But thanks for expressing that. Anyway, your thoughts, sir.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wasn't calling really to disagree with you. It was more of an observation.
Sure. Go ahead.
I've been following the Q drops for about since the beginning, and I'm kind of on the fence about it right now. So, you know, I don't really know what to think, but it is interesting. It's thought-provoking, and I can understand how some people might take it to the extreme. But I would say this, too, that you see a lot of that same kind of cult behavior around Christian leaders and apostles and prophets. So I don't know if Christians are more prone to it or what the deal is, but I don't think it's endemic to just the Q movement, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, no. There's something that's happening, a phenomenon right now. I wrote an article late last night about it, so it should be up different sites today, tomorrow. About as I look back at 2020, I see it more than anything as a crisis of truth and a crisis of trust. Who can I believe? For example, we have every reason to really scorn a lot of the so-called mainstream media. It wasn't just imbalanced reporting. You know, like if I listen to Rush Limbaugh, I know I'm going to get his conservative commentary. Or Sean Hannity, I'm going to get his conservative commentary, and I'm going to sort it out. But supposedly, if I'm reading the New York Times or going to ABC, supposedly I'm just going to get news there. Well, it wasn't just not the case, but stories were withheld. I mean, journalistic decisions were made to withhold information that could affect the outcome of the election, and big tech was part of that. You know, Twitter suppressing the New York Post story about Hunter Biden. That's vile. That is despicable.
Right.
And
I agree.
So what happens is, and then you have President Trump feeding into this, saying for years, believe me, I know more than the military. I know more than that. I know more than the medical profession. Believe me. And then fake news. So on the one hand, he rightly exposed a lot of junk. But with it comes this thing, well, who can I trust? And now, is Dr. Fauci a saint or a sinner? And the CDC, are they out to help us or are they out to kill us? You know, Big Pharma, are they for us or against us? So there's this crisis of trust. And then obviously the president has his own cult-like following. So you go from you can't believe the media to you only believe the president. So now Bill Barr is a bad guy. DOJ is bad. Supreme Court's bad. Everybody's bad except the president. And then you add in Christians who by nature are skeptical of the world, and the world system, right? For good reason. And who know that there's spiritual corruption potentially in every human being. Then add in the charismatic element, and I'm part of the charismatic church, with all the prophets saying this. And so this is a recipe for spiritual and intellectual disaster. This is a recipe for mass deception on a level that honestly I've never seen before. I was talking to Nancy last night and saying this tells you how you could actually have the whole world follow an Antichrist. You just think of a calamity 10 times worse than the pandemic with an economic collapse, and somebody emerges as the leader who's going to fix this. Man, it's dangerous. May we have a spirit of excellence to analyze, to pursue, to review, to study. May we have a spirit of truth. Thank you for the call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the line of fire. Remember, listen, half hour from now, 4:15 Eastern time, we'll be back on the Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel, right, during our weekly Q&A chat. And if you're interested in QAnon, the first reviews are coming in that are excellent, really loving the book. The QAnon Deception. Get it on Amazon in ebook or in paperback. We're so committed to the research that Dr. Beverly and his team did. He had a team working day and night on this, that we published the book with our own imprint, Equal Time Books. This way, rather than waiting 6, 8, 10 months or a year before the book is out, is common in publishing for various reasons, and the publishers have to operate like that. This is something we wanted to get out immediately. So we've made it available to you, and the Kindle is priced, the ebook especially low, especially for a brand new book, because we want to get this out to the maximum readership. And you'll see Jim Beverly's a very reasonable guy. I mean, twice on the air, both days, Monday, Tuesday, he gave out his personal email address saying, if you find anything factually wrong in what I'm saying or in the book, please contact me. And it's not to fight. It's because he loves truth. All right, let us go to Russ in Dalton, Georgia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, thank you.
You bet.
Yes, sir. I would just let you know real quickly off the cuff, is 99% agreement with you. I want to say thank you what you do for the body. I believe you're a great support, a godsend. I absolutely love the Facebook post you did of you 49 years ago. So thank you for God changing you and you coming to the body and bringing truth to us. So thank you for what you've done. Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
I do have
you.
One
thank
comment
you for the kind
of
words.
Difference
yeah.
with
Please.
You that I
Please.
Would like to address, and that is on the topic of the preaching of Andy Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
I have read your material. I've listened to your videos, and I've appreciated your engagement. But I do believe you have been rather lighthearted. I don't want to say lighthearted, but taken a light stance on his teachings. And specifically, I'm not talking right now about his position on the Old Testament, which I think you and I would agree on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking specifically about what he said about 4 years ago from the pulpit, where he basically made the position that it didn't matter about the virgin birth. The really only thing that mattered was a resurrection. And so I would like to ask you, how can you handle that relative to the teachings in Revelation chapter 13? And you just mentioned a moment ago about the end times and about the Antichrist. Well, the Antichrist, or at least aspects of the Antichrist, will have a fake resurrection. And if the virgin birth of Jesus isn't that important, how can you deal with that? And specifically, why haven't you addressed Andy Stanley more firmly?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking the question. And thank you, someone that agrees with me 99% of the time, for doing what I asked and to call and differ with me. This is exactly what I asked for, whether it's you're a friend or foe. I want to hear where people differ with me. The whole purpose of the show after my opening comments was, please tell me where you think I'm wrong. So when I got to look more at what Andy Stanley said, and then we begin to interact privately, I understood that he was saying, look, I'm an inerrantist. I believe in the inspiration of Scripture. I studied under Norm Geisler. I affirm all those things. But what matters ultimately is the resurrection. In other words, the provable thing that is the ultimate linchpin of our faith. He affirms the virgin birth, and as far as I understand, was not saying that Jesus could be the Messiah if he was not virgin born. In other words, as far as I understand, he believes for our salvation and for the gospel record to be true, that Jesus had to be virgin born, and that the Scripture is 100% truthful when it says that. And if the Scripture was lying about that, then we have to question it overall. But he was saying that the battleground issue should be the resurrection. That's the ultimate thing that separates him from everyone else. Now you say, well, what about at the end of the age, if Revelation 13 is speaking of a resurrection event? Well, the first thing is, if that's so, and if it is the end of the age, that does not apply to all of us that have lived for these 2,000 years before then. But this is a big proof throughout the New Testament that he rose, that he rose, that he rose, that he rose, and that not only did he rise, but he has authority. There may be an end time deception which tries to draw away from that, but that'll be short-lived. God's going to destroy that Antichrist figure. You know, so if there is an end time deception, we'll still have the power of Jesus' name that is the ultimate proof of his resurrection, that his name still has power today, and that deception will be destroyed very, very quickly, because this has been a major apologetic of the whole New Testament, the resurrection. So that's what I understood Andy to mean. My difference with him would be that he says things in certain provocative ways that then draw attention to the wrong thing. And maybe that's his goal. He's trying to get people to think or get them to question or whatever. And, you know, we've joked about it as recently as probably 2 weeks ago. He had sent me a note, just a praise report he wanted me to hear. And I said, great to hear from you. I was just thinking that I promised to write a book called Why Andy Stanley's Irresistible Must Be Resisted. I was thinking of that literally at the moment that he tweeted me. So he smiled. So he knows the differences that I do have. Now, maybe I'm wrong. In other words, maybe I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. But did you hear something I didn't hear, sir, that would tell me I'm misunderstanding his point, that what he said was more heretical than I'm thinking?
Yes, I would. And I guess it boils down to, you know, you talked about how he talks kind of loosely. I would go as far as to say he talks recklessly. And so, for instance, I can drive down the highway at 70 miles an hour and fine, but if I take your daughter in the car and I drive 150 miles an hour down the interstate, same car, you would say, Russ, you know, you're driving, but you're driving recklessly. And so the way I do anything, whether it's drive a car or use language, it matters. And so I know for a fact that Andy Stanley's teachings of disregarding the Old Testament have led people away from the faith. Okay, without question. Now, I know his goal is to try to attract, but if you think about it, Jesus did just the exact opposite. Jesus didn't try to attract them with ease and comfort and whatever. He said, eat of my flesh, drink of my blood. So he talked the
tough stuff. All right, so let me just jump in. Now, you could be entirely right, okay? I'm not saying that just because you appreciate my ministry and, you know, I want to be affirming. I have not looked into things, except for some of his teachings, like the virgin birth thing. I didn't listen to the whole sermon or look at everything involved. I took him at his word when he explained what he did about it. You could be entirely right. In other words, he could be reckless, and that's irresponsible. And I always try to qualify things to avoid that. But let me just turn this around for a second. So you could be entirely right, okay? But couldn't you say that when Jesus said things like that, eat my flesh, drink my blood, that he was leaving himself open to complete misunderstanding? And that, yes, on the one hand, he was sifting the crowds to see who was really with him and not. But wouldn't that be an example of him speaking in a way that I would never do that because I wouldn't want to be misunderstood. But he said something that he knew would be misunderstood. So what's your take?
Well, first of all, he knew that he would ultimately send us the Holy Spirit, okay, that would be our comforter. It would also be the Spirit that would explain these things to us, which is exactly why you and I can hold the Bible in our hand, because it's that same Spirit brought to mind to Matthew and to Mark and to Luke and to John so that they could write something down that had happened, you know, some distance in the past. And with that revelation of the Spirit, I would say that he believes the same thing is true with us. So even if something you say might be tough for me to hear, but if God's Spirit's working on you and God's Spirit's working on me, I'm going to understand it.
So you think that that's different than being reckless? That's saying hard saying.
Oh, it's not even they're not even in the same league.
Got it.
Yeah, completely different.
All right. Well, listen. Okay. I want to try to get to one more call, but tell you what, you could be entirely right. And there are people, there are preachers that are out there. The moment they say something, they know they're going to get a note from me, and they're going to then post a clarification. I don't think Andy does his ministry thinking, okay, Mike Brown's going to be contacting me in a minute with a different disagreement here. But there are some, I mean, well-known, the guy would be on TV, and right after he'd get a note from me, I'd see something, I'd say, bro, what did you say? And he's, okay, I'm going to clarify it, et cetera. So if he has been reckless, then may God help me to be a blessing in his life to help him to speak with more precision and care. Hey, thank you, Russ, for the call. All right, Matt in Moorhead, Minnesota. I'm sorry, time is really short, but if you can get your question out quick, I'll try to answer quick.
Oh, thanks. Wondering if you could comment on Revelation 17:10.
Okay.
And preterism.
Got it. So I wholeheartedly, categorically reject full preterism, just to make this statement as I'm getting the verse. I categorically, wholeheartedly reject full preterism that Jesus has already returned, that there will be no physical resurrection of the dead, that we're already in the new heavens and the earth. Categorically reject that as serious error. Partial preterism I have strong differences with in terms of the second coming emphasis with the year 70 and even Israel being cursed then, etc. But Revelation 17:10, but of course we don't divide over that. This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven hills on which the woman is sitting. Also, there are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is living now, and the other is yet to come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while. My own view, in short, 10 seconds, is that had to have some level of first century fulfillment that would make sense to the believers then, and an ultimate fulfillment that will make sense to believers at the end of the age. That's ultimately how I see Revelation playing out. But certainly there has to be a first century application as well, because it had to have some level of meaning for those first believers to receive it. But I believe it will have an end time final meaning as well. Sorry, couldn't take more time.